Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is March 18th, 2016, and on today's show, I'm happy to welcome back writer, web designer, and ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. During the last few weeks, we have been exploring some of the workbook lessons, and we're going to continue that today. And a couple of weeks ago, we looked at lessons 68 through 70, which were on the topic of holding grievances. Now, you've probably noticed in the workbook that the lessons will go over a certain theme, and then they're going to pick it up again. And the lesson title sounds maybe a little different. It may be coming from a different angle, but in essence, it's telling us the same thing. And the course is very single-minded when it comes to its message. We have a right mind. There is no separation between ourselves and God, or between ourselves and what we perceive as other people. We have an inner guide and teacher who can gently remind us we have a mind and we have a choice, and it is possible to perceive ourselves and the world differently than how we usually see it. So in the lessons that are coming up, starting, I think, today, tomorrow, and coming up this week, we hear the echo of that message from a few weeks ago about the cost of holding grievances. In essence, it's a no-win situation for us or for the world. Holding grievances is a way of staying in the dark, and in effect, it's an obstacle that we throw up so that we don't have to see things clearly. Now, the lessons that are scheduled for this week not only have that theme about, you know, the cost of grievances, but you're going to notice a few other things too. One is that he's really introducing to us the idea of the definition of miracles, because it's not necessarily what we think. It's not about healing the sick or, you know, or winning the lotto. It's not so much in those outward expressions. And so if you listen carefully, if you read these carefully, you'll see that he's training us in terms of what is a miracle and why are we entitled to miracles. Now, another idea, we may not get to this today. We may do it, maybe we'll do it next week, but there's another idea that's coming in here in the lessons for this week, in lessons 79 and 80, which is, let me recognize the problem so it can be solved, and let me recognize that my problems have been solved. And I particularly like those lessons too, because it kind of introduces this idea that, you know, our problems have really been solved, and we've just removed ourselves from the solution. Now, that's kind of an interesting idea. Have you ever thought about that? That there's a solution and you just kind of removed yourself from it, or you made an obstacle? So maybe we'll cover those next week. But anyway, this next week, there's a lot of great material that's coming out of these lessons, specifically 77 through 80. So today, Bruce and I will start talking about that. And while you're listening to the show today, you can actually join us on Facebook. We have a private group. And if you haven't ever been there, you can get there by going to 12radio.com. That's our radio website. And on the left side of the page, you're going to see a number of things, including, you know, how to get into the chat room. You're going to see the on-demand. You're going to see the schedule for the radio shows. Lots of good information. So if you don't ever go there, go there. But anyway, if you go, you'll see a chat button. And that's actually a link, and it'll automatically redirect you to our private group on Facebook. So please do that if you'd like to join us that way and make some comments. I always read those comments, and we don't usually respond to them during the show, but I will at some point. So thank you so much for doing that. So welcome, Bruce. Good to hear you today.
Hi, CA. Great to be here as always. Thanks.
Good. And are you excited about these lessons?
I am. There's a lot of good stuff there. And I think right off the bat, you touched on several really useful and helpful ideas. One of which I think is to how the course redefines, you know, a lot of our language, including a lot of, you know, traditional, certainly in the Western world, Christian terminology, and miracles is, you know, a bullseye in both of those, you know, the general as well as the Christian jargon aspects, because we usually think of miracles as something fixing the form, something changing an external circumstance that's going to make us happy by, you know, from the outside, working on the inside. In other words, the space-time situation, circumstance, or condition, you know, the outcome of whatever, somehow going to magically, you know, turn our minds to a happy thought system, and it's we've got it all backwards, you know. But so the miracle, really, that the A Course in Miracles talks about, since it's in the title of the book, even, really has to do, as you know, any student who's more than cracked the book for a few minutes would begin to recognize, that it really has to do with the mind, and the miracle, as the entire course does, it's about the mind and not anything else. And if we can remember to see the symbolic, representational nature of the language, that it's telling us that we've got everything backwards, and what we really have identified with are symbols. The individual self that we think we are, and the bodies that are their poster children, those are actually symbols or metaphors for the idea that we could possibly be separate from each other and from perfect oneness and from what we think of as our creator. And so that ties into another thing that you started out with is the, you know, the duality, you know, and the schizophrenic nature of the thought system that we hang out in most of the time, the ego thought system, as the course would describe it, is really what prevents us. That's the block to the miracle. That idea that somehow it's possible to have you know, a gap or a separation from perfect oneness, and that somehow we pulled it off. So the schizophrenia is really what we're here to unlearn, and that's what the real miracle is that we have another option that isn't among the ones that the ego presents for us, and it's you know, it's full splendor of all the different options of illusions and dream choices. There's one that basically is it's still a dream choice, it's still an illusion, but it's the one that takes us out of that awareness and shifts the awareness from being a dream figure to being a dreamer of the dream. We go from the who to the what, and the what is really the awareness behind the Homo sapiens dream figure to the pure non-dual awareness that the course would talk about, that is really the essence of our true self with a capital S, you know, we come to know slowly but surely as we practice these lessons, such as I'm entitled to miracles.
Right.
Yeah.
Good information. And, you know, I would reiterate, though, for people that this is one of those things, like, for instance, I've heard Ken Wapnick say many times, and actually Susan Dugan, I guess, too, that we shouldn't be taking the titles to these lessons and using them as affirmations.
Right.
And this is one of those ones that is so true. I am entitled to miracles. It's really tempting to kind of take that and go with it. And or if you don't really study A Course in Miracles, it's tempting to take that and use it as an affirmation without ever realizing what it really means. And it's important that we recognize that this is a course in retraining the way we're thinking about some of these concepts. And we are entitled to miracles, but not those external expressions. Not fixing, not rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Right.
You know, it's not about changing the world.
Nor is it, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
Right!
It's not about that. I mean, not that that isn't a fun song, but if we try to make it about the form, try to make it about, you know, what seems to be our circumstance, and we're all so, you know, more than we realize, way more than we realize, addicted and enthralled and enraptured by, you know, the siren song of form, and by, you know, thinking that somehow just the right person or people or place, you know, if I just could move to the right part of the planet or have the right house or car or bank, you know, banking financial
right.
situation or health regimen, or, you know, if I could just, you know, turn back the clock and have the body I had when I was 20 or, you know, fill in the blanks, you know, just any number of things or combinations of things we struggle and clamor and spend so much of our energy on trying to adjust and modify and finagle and manipulate outcomes. And we're gonna do those things anyway. But if we can be more gentle and just kind of watch with more amusement at our ego's attempts to try to ascribe meaning to those things, and to try to make it a big deal when things happen or don't happen, that awareness is what slowly deflates the big dealness out of ego strategy and allows us to shift our identity from the dream character back to the dreamer. And that's where the real peace lies, is when we can watch the shenanigans and the craziness on the screen of our mind and say, oh, I made this all up. And what a hilarious comedy from above the battleground. But when we're in the thick of it, what do you mean this is funny? Don't tell me this is funny, right?
That's right. But there's oftentimes we do kind of look back on it. I mean, it doesn't take that much to look back on just even a few years ago. And you think about some of the things you did, you thought, you said, you know, or even something as silly as wardrobe. And you go, oh, my God, did I really have my hair cut like that? You know,
there's actually a Christine Lavin song, who's a folk singer, who has this wonderful song I got to hear her sing live years ago. She goes, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, in retrospect, if we really look with a kind-hearted gentleness at all the strategies that, you know, each of our egos has tried to enact and make happen, and how we set ourselves up for failure, and the miracle is basically not changing the outcome, but changing how we think about the outcome. And mm-hmm. that's that identity shift. And should we read some of the
Absolutely, yeah, because there's some great stuff in here.
Yeah, okay. I'll go ahead and start. Lesson 77, I'm entitled to miracles. And again, we're not talking about anything external, just it's all about the mind. You are entitled to miracles because of what you are. Not who, what you are. I'll try to pay attention. There's a few, you know, literary, digressions, but a lot of times when the course uses the word what instead of who, usually there's a point to it, and I think this is a good example. You will receive miracles because of what God is, and you will offer miracles because you are one with God. Again, how simple is salvation? It is merely a statement of your true identity. It is this that we will celebrate today. Woohoo! Do you want to read the next one?
Yeah. Your claim to miracles does not lie in your illusions about yourself. It does not depend on any magical powers that you have ascribed to yourself, nor on any of the rituals you have devised. It is inherent in the truth of what you are. It is implicit in what God your Father is. It was ensured in your creation and guaranteed by the laws of God. Now, I particularly like that. I mean, just that whole talk about shenanigans, mm-hmm, because it says it doesn't depend on any magical powers or any rituals that you've come up with, you know.
And that's freedom, isn't it? Because if it's not dependent, if we're not at the mercy of how well we carry out ego's insane strategies to try to make us happy through external means, that means we're actually free. You know, the prison door is not only unlocked, but it's open. You know, we just need to give it just a little shove and waltz right through, you know. And that's metaphorically what we do when we forgive our grievances and say, oh, I'm looking at all this stuff I made up to make me upset. You know, I forgot that I signed the screenplay on every page, flipping through it, and it's like, there's my signature on the bottom of every page. I set this up to be annoying, to be a collection of incredibly diverse but photorealistic and war, you know, production, high production value, award-winning 3D holographic experiences of disappointment. And, you know, what was I thinking? And that whole strategy, when we look at it and can laugh at it gently, realize that was just silly. It wasn't, like Ken Wapnick says, it's not evil, wicked, or sinful. It's just silly. It's just a truly forgivable, laughable joke that we, you know, from that perspective, and only from that perspective, can we embrace that and feel peace around it. And that the freedom to not be shackled by you know, being at the mercy of what seems to be going on around or not going on around us, you know, and it all brings it back to the mind, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I love what you just said there. You know, there on the screenplay is my signature on every page, because I think that's such an important thing, because it comes back to taking responsibility. Yeah. And in fact, yeah, on my other radio show a week or two ago, I was talking about that. Now, it was in terms of an eclipse, so it was in terms of astrology, but just the power that we have when we take responsibility for our choices, for our beliefs, for maybe not exactly how the outcome is, but when we take responsibility for the choices and for our beliefs and our thoughts and our perceptions, well, then we're totally empowered, because it's like, oh, well, I don't like the way that one went. Let's make a different choice. But when we become victims, this is happening to me. That's when, to me, it all goes awry. So I love that visual of, yep, there's my signature on every single page. I forgot, but there's my signature.
I think it's a helpful metaphor. So I come back to that a lot. And that empowerment has nothing to do with power over anything. It's power with. It's really the all-inclusive, truly infinite power of spirit that we all have as our birthright and our heritage. But the ego's, dysfunctional, maladaptive strategy for the non-existent problem that it made up to eradicate it is really a power over. It's always at the expense of, or in conflict with, or, you know, something versus something. There's always an or rather than an and involved. There's never any peace with that. I think that's where the root of the ontological guilt that Ken Wapnick talks about is, which is, you know, ontological just being a fancy word in my mind for you know, deep and fundamental.
Yeah.
but the idea that somehow we were able to pull off a world and a mental world where separation was possible, and we you know, felt like we abandoned God. And metaphorically killed God off. The guilt behind that is just phenomenal. We can't really fathom it, and we probably would be best advised not to try to plumb the depths of that all at once. And we fortunately get an opportunity to look at it moment to moment in little bite-sized, you know, smaller chunks that we can handle. And that's what our life really represents, is everything that seems to come back to us from reflected from our mind is really the perfect forgiveness classroom, moment to moment, to look at. And that's where the real miracle is. That's where how we claim the miracles and employ the classroom that's been given to us, that we made, that we signed off on, and we just to go along with it and cultivate a gentle inner laugh and a inner smile, and sometimes an outer smile and a laugh, but to just see how amazingly sophisticated a strategy we came up with to try to keep ourselves mindless, and then just say, nope, I'm not falling for this time. I think I'll go for the miracle instead.
Well, and I had this funny thing running through my head, and I'm not even sure it's totally appropriate, but I guess where I was going with this is that's it. Instead of just going to the source, instead of just going to what's simple, what's easy, mm-hmm. you know, remaining there, we do go through all these gyrations, you know, to create something else. And where my mind kind of went is, okay, we've got electricity in our house, and yet we're spending all this time trying to create like maybe a barbecue outside. And I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't have barbecue, but you get the drift of like, you know, building a fire, building power in other ways. And specifically, this is where I'm going to go with it. I saw something equivalent to an infomercial recently, and it was some kind of little gadget, you know, that you put in the microwave so that you can grill things and cook things and make it more like a real oven, right? Well, as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, why wouldn't you just turn on the oven? I mean, and the only reason I can really imagine is if you truly were living in a dorm room, or if you were living in a place where you didn't have a full-size stove, which, you know, is very possible. It could be a senior citizen area. It could be you've got a cabin on the lake. There could be lots of reasons why you'd want to turn your microwave into a regular oven. But for the most part, all these things that the person was demonstrating, every single time I thought, Well, it seems like it'd be easier to just get out like a saucepan and put it on the stove.
Yeah,
why would I do all this microwave, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so all of a sudden when you were talking, I was thinking that same thing that, you know, as I got more and more watching this woman on the infomercial, you know, okay, and why would I do that? And why would I do that? And why would I do that? But in my life, I don't catch that so often that I am going through all these shenanigans, all these gyrations. And it's like, why don't I just kind of go back to the source?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why am I always trying to create a substitute for something that works pretty well to start with?
And sometimes, like you're talking about, it's a substitute for a substitute. And or a substitute for a substitute for a substitute, but we get in these levels of you know obfuscation and confusion and diversion that the ego as long as it can keep us off track, you know, that's the perverted, distorted, crazy success of the ego that is basically trying to make sure that we don't look at the guilt, because if we did. Then we would actually be happy, and then there would be no reason for the ego.
Right.
Like, what? I can't right. do this. I've got to perpetuate the lie here, you know.
That's right.
That's its absurd voice. And that kind of reminds me again of a few years ago. I was doing process improvement consulting for the Air Force, and I studied the Toyota manufacturing system, and they have this thing called the five whys. And I was struck as I was studying this about the metaphysical implications, which they don't really, you know, note that at all. But when you think about it, if we look at the why, and it's kind of the typical, you know, obnoxious kid in the third grade classroom is like, why, you know, and why do we, but if we keep asking that really, but not on the superficial level, but ask, why am I doing anything? We get to the purpose of nature of those two thought systems. And the purpose of the ego's thought system is always to make unclear and to complicate and to divide and to obfuscate and to obscure and to make substitutes that are temporary expedients that eventually we realize, well, this isn't making me happy. And then the only other real alternative, as the Course puts it, is to forgive and to see the silliness and without condemnation, and let ourselves and everyone else off the hook at the same time when we do that. And that is metaphorically opening our eyes. That's the real miracle that we're entitled to, that brings us back to the awareness that we never messed up in truth. You know, we only to the degree that we identify with an unsolvable, insane substitute world that is forever chasing something that's unattainable, only to that degree are we imprisoned. But it seems pretty real to us at times. It's not to make light of anyone's, you know, situations that may be extremely challenging and horrific at times. But when we can step back and look at it from a grander, more cosmic perspective, we see that everything that we've thought of that involves space, time, individuality, bodies, matter, energy, you know, the whole cosmos from the micro to the macro is just an incredibly elaborate propaganda machine and a giant network of substitutions and replacements for the the ancient master's word, so to speak, the primal oneness that we never left, the Godhead, the pure awareness of non-duality that never was violated, never was divided or corrupted.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I love how this particular lesson ends when it says, I will not trade miracles for grievances.
Yes.
And, you know, once again, just the cost, the price of all of this, you know, shenanigans. I love that word today, obviously. But just, you know, that's it. We go through all of these efforts just to hold on to our grievances. Like as before we recorded, you said, you know, right versus happy.
Uh-huh.
You know, I will do all this stuff just to prove I'm right. I'm going to hold my grievances. I want to hold my idea of separation. I want to hold my idea of not being safe, whatever it is. I'm going to do that instead of just accepting what's there for me. And I think the reason I threw in that safe one is because I've been noticing that a lot in people lately, using the word that they don't feel safe. And I would say a lot of this has to do with the political, you know, arena.
Uh-huh.
That I'm hearing people say, well, how can I protect myself? And, you know, we're just not safe. And, you know, I kind of put it equivalent to the sky is falling, the sky is falling. And yet I don't also want to make light of people's fears. But, you know, when I hear it, I just think, once again, how important it is to have a spiritual discipline, whether or not it's the Course in Miracles or something else. Because on one hand, you know, this has been the history of mankind.
Right.
And I'm not saying I like what's going on politically and you know, some of the, you know, it's just talk about childishness. You know, it's just unbelievable.
Over the top.
Yeah, it's over the top. But it's also, for me, it goes right back to, you know, why do I need to see myself as separated from these people? Why do I need to identify a culprit? Why do I need to identify the bad guy?
Uh-huh,
you know, which in fact is perfect for the next lesson, 78, which is let miracles replace all grievances, because I love this one in particular because it's the one that gives us that perfect lesson about how to look at a person and go through this sort of, not exactly a meditation, but go through this process of looking at them differently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this to me kind of is a standout lesson that way of no matter who it is, whether it's a political figure or whether it's your mother or your best friend or your employer, you know, choose somebody. And if you can kind of get this down about what's your first instinct when you don't feel safe, when you feel rejected, when you feel, you know, whatever, abandoned, whatever it is, could you just do this exercise kind of quickly and bring yourself back to why do I have this investment in making them the bad guy?
Mm-hmm. You know? And that investment really, when it's coming from the ego, is an investment in an insane strategy to not be safe, guised, you know, put in the guise or, you know, disguised as an attempt at safety, but that's a safety is that's based on a specific thing in a specific dream being a certain way or a set
right.
of conditions, you know.
Right.
And what we've forgotten, you know, lock, stock, and barrel, is the idea that the ego made up this world in order to the original purpose, the default purpose, unless we look at it, is fear. Is to create a terrorized mind, or to make, I should say, using the Course jargon, and then populate it with figures that seem to be outside that maintain a fake innocence that's a partial innocence, because any innocence that's partial has to be fake because it's either all or, you know,
all or nothing.
All or nothing, yeah, yeah. And if we include everyone in our, you know, unconditional positive regard or innocence or acceptance or love or whatever we want to call it, that basically, including dogs and family members and everyone we know, that then becomes a way of reminding ourselves that we're all in it together. We all have a stake in returning home. And every time we choose that awareness, we're automatically, you know, snapped back into that awareness. And it doesn't take, you know, years and years. It can happen in a split second, you know, like your show theme, you know, why wait for heaven? Why wait for the opportunity to relieve yourself of the fear? And, but we, you know, obviously it's a decision that we each make moment to moment. You can't really describe the process other than talk about the reflection in a sense, because it's really, you know, to talk about that pure awareness, all we can do is use the best we have in terms of words to describe that decision-making faculty. But we all have it. I think we're all drawn to this. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't be talking about it, and the people listening to the program probably wouldn't be listening, because we know that there's something more. We know that there must be a better way, as Helen and Bill.
They're a couple, Bill and Bellen.
Well, Billin and Hell may have been where they started, right? But anyway, an unintentional spoonerism there.
No, that's okay. But anyway, I really would draw people's attention to Lesson 78.
Yes.
Because like I said, I think it's a standout in terms of, you know, it's, in a sense, it's what we always want, because we all, I'm always the one asking the question, what do I do? You know, give me an exercise, give me something to do. And in a sense, that's exactly what they're doing for us in Lesson 78. They're giving us something to do, you know, and saying literally, we will select one person that you have used as a target for your grievances. And practice laying those grievances aside and look at him. And what I also love, this is where, to me, the Course just has that direct arrow, that direct truth, that, you know, not mincing words. And in the next paragraph when he goes, you know the person to choose. His name has already crossed your mind. And, you know, I remember the first time I read that, I went, whoa. It was like, it was kind of psychic. Like, you know, but they know the minute this one's, you know, the minute it said, okay, we're going to do an exercise and we want you to select somebody that you've been holding grievances against. It's like, nobody has to search their mind very long to find that person.
Moi?
Yeah. It's like, boom, you know, nailed me, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that italicized, paragraph on the second page is, let me behold my Savior in this one you have appointed as the one for me to ask, to lead me to the holy light in which he stands, that I may join with him. And of course, this could be anyone, you know, doesn't matter the gender or the age or the, just anyone who crosses your mind, or anything that crosses your mind, including our grievances with our own bodies, our grievances with our environment. You know, obviously people are such a great metaphor, because they're symbols of aspects of self that we've apparently projected and hurled out of our own mind and made into these actors and actresses. So that's why the Course, you know, spends such a great amount of emphasis on looking at the people in our lives, because that's what we think we are. So it meets us where we think we're. If we were amoebas, you know, it was like, select an amoeba that you're most upset with, you know. But because we think we're people, you know, it says, oh, okay, well, you know, find a person, you know. But still, it's an opportunity to look at everyone as our Savior. It's and to see that the curriculum that we need to get is being presented to us on a silver platter with every single person, every single interaction, that's giving us an opportunity to look at the contents of our mind and choose once again and say, oh, I could see peace in the set of this.
That's right. And in this case, I could do this exercise quickly and I could see peace instead of this, you know? And I remember too, the first time I did this lesson, I could feel the resistance inside of me, because I did choose somebody that I was particularly angry with, particularly, you know, had been horrible to me or whatever. And I remember as I was reading through the lesson, I thought, I don't know if I'm ready to let go of my grievance.
Sure.
You know, what if this works?
Yeah.
What if this really works and I have to let go of my grievance? And I remember thinking, I don't know, maybe I should choose somebody else. You know?
Yeah. Who would I be?
Yeah, I don't know if I want to let this one go. And that's kind of a funny thing. So, you know, it's so front and center when all of a sudden you realize, if you're given the option of being happy or given the option of letting go of something in your life that's really making you miserable, why would you hesitate? Why would I wait for heaven?
Right.
And yet it was so obvious to me, because I went, oh, maybe I better choose somebody else because this might really work, and then I can't be mad at them anymore. You know, or whatever.
Yeah. And we're so identified with our stories and our grievances
that
we don't recognize the extent to which those grievances become our identity. And unless perhaps maybe you listen to someone going on and on about, you know, their all their problems, you know, and it could be your own, you know, self-observation too. If you just really honestly look at the contents of your mind on a given day and say, oh my gosh, was that diatribe of grievances really what I think about myself? And, you know, it can be kind of scary. So A Course in Miracles really could be also called a Course in Identity Transformation, because we're really transforming our identity from one of grievances to one of gratitude And the gratitude comes when we bring our awareness back into the mind, recognize that all the figures that seem to populate it are in our mind as well. And each one of them is our savior. Each one of them is the appointed emissary for peace. Whether or not they seem to be expressing that doesn't matter, but they can be a reminder. This is what's in my mind and a reflection of a thought system that I was choosing. And I can use that to choose again. I can use it to choose peace. And I love that the universal applicability, it always works, in other words, is, and it's so simple, is if someone is expressing loving kindness, then that's easy. You just respond with the same, with loving kindness. But if someone appears to be in our minds, again, that's the only place it exists, less than that, whether it's, you know, anywhere from suspiciousness to viciousness, you know, to outright warfare to just a, you know, minor annoyance, that whole spectrum, the appropriate response is still loving kindness. And that is a very empowering, a very freeing revelation, because that gives us the opportunity to use everything as a way to be free and to be happy in each moment. That's the real miracle, because our identity is shifted in that moment.
Right. And I'm loving that you brought that up, and just that identity thing and the identity shift for ourselves, because I think it's in the workbook and in the text. Mm-hmm. There are specifically places where it says, when you think of accusing somebody of something, stop and ask yourself, would I accuse myself of this?
Exactly.
You know, I don't remember. I think it is in the text where they talk about the sword you're holding over your head.
Mm-hmm.
You're holding your sword. You are ready to whack that head off, right? And it says, so as you're holding that sword, ask yourself, would I accuse myself of this? Mm-hmm. And I love that. I mean, I have always loved that, because it, once again, to me, that is just the truth. It's just the truth coming home. And forever after that, I often think, when I hear myself bitching and complaining about somebody, I'm like, are you talking about yourself? And you know what, Bruce? Unfortunately, I am.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, and I hate that. I hate that, because it's like, well, no, I wouldn't do that. And it's like, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You know? Yeah. You would. That's why you're so upset about this person doing it, because you're feeling guilty about something similar you did.
Exactly. And I think we need to go through that and not skip over steps, is to look at the ego's adverse reaction and to see how it recoils and is terrified, by recognizing that its strategy is infinitely flawed, hopelessly muddled and ineffective, and, you know, based on a fearful and tragic outcome, but only in a dream. And when we look at that honestly, that is so freeing, because that basically says, I don't have to see my brother as sinful. It's really the sinlessness. And, you know, if I accuse someone else of what I'm really accusing myself of, and we see the insanity of that strategy, that frees us up in those moments when we're willing to do that, to say that to ourselves, I'm not the victim of the world I see. I really can choose an awareness that is free from that incrimination, just by bringing it back to my mind, taking the specific that seems to be happening to me, the grievance or the upset, or, you know, whatever, you know, figure on TV seems to be annoying us or wanting to hurl something at, or, you know, someone in traffic, you know, that cuts us off, or, you know, all the cliches and non-cliches. If we can just kind of look at those things and say to ourselves, this is an aspect of my mind that I've projected out as my classroom. That's my perfect savior, again, that I've appointed to lead me back to the holy light of forgiveness.
Right.
And to set us both free at that moment.
Well, and I love that you're saying an aspect of my mind, because I think where people get really hung up on this is they go, I wouldn't do that. That's not me. And it's like, well, number one, if you're in denial, then you wouldn't recognize if it was you in the first place. Mm-hmm. But if you could, I mean, it's a more neutral place to say it's an aspect of your mind. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. an aspect that you have chosen unconsciously to project outside of yourself. Unfortunately, if you want to have a little awareness, once you see it, then you can transform it.
Right.
You can do something different, you know? So if we even just, I mean, like I said, when I first read that in the textbook, I remember going, is this true? Oh my God, is this true? Mm-hmm. You know? And so now, I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't stop me from going off on my tirades, but when I do, I can assure you, I later go, oh my God, was I talking about me? You know, and is that an aspect of my mind? And how can I heal that aspect of my mind?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the challenge is to realize that when we see that, we're actually looking as a decision-making mind at the ego. We're catching it in the act of identifying with its own projections. But that's the greatest opportunity. Rather than despairing and thinking, "Oh, I'm this wretched, egoic, selfish," you know,
yeah.
"selfish, guilty bastard," you know, and saying that's all there is. There's that peaceful awareness just beyond that, that if we stick with it and look at it without recrimination, without condemnation, without judging ourselves harshly, and just say, oh, that's just, you know, that's how egos think.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you know, not pour a kerosene on the fire, but conversely, by looking at it, we actually are turning the volume down on it and allowing the forgotten song, the sweetness that's the eternal being that we all share, that is the infinitely peaceful beyond anything we can imagine awareness, to shine through that darkness. And that is, I think, what we're all wanting to return to and to remember. And that's, I think, why we're drawn to this study, because we know that if we study the contents of our mind and use every little bit of what goes on around us as our classroom, that we have the opportunity to undo the ego. And that's huge. That's really, really fun, actually, ultimately.
Yeah. And I think one of the important things here is making that distinction between denial and undoing the ego. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's plenty of historical experiences or demonstrations of turning the other cheek, so to mm-hmm. speak, mm-hmm. that has, you know, and then all we're doing is getting into resentment. Right. I'm going to forgive you, damn it, you know, that kind of thing. And really coming to a new understanding of what we're talking about here and a new understanding of forgiveness. It's not about turning the other cheek. It's not about forcing yourself to be the better person. It's about literally undoing the ego
right,
by
right.
looking at, just looking at it, being the observer, being the neutral observer and not judging and allowing your mind to be changed. So like once again, in this particular lesson, as they take us through these steps, it's like, allow your mind to be changed. You know, it's not about denial. It's just about allowing the ego to be undone, allowing the knots to be untied.
Right. And the untying is really the true forgiveness that the Course addresses, which is a forgiveness that recognizes that what we think has happened to us has not occurred in truth. Not on a level form. It certainly is, you know, things that seem to have happened on that level and the level of on the dream screen, sure, you know, and would be foolish and contrary to what the Course suggests to go there in our minds. But if we can shift slowly but surely, just like those magic eye posters you might have remembered from a few years back, where if you see this sort of this strange collection of abstract shapes, and if you focus a little bit past the poster or past mm-hmm. the page, if it's in a book, suddenly after a few seconds, something shifts and as your focal point shifts, you're looking beyond it metaphorically, and in this case, literally, and those magic eye, three-dimensional shapes just sort of pop out at you because of the stereo vision effect. And I think the Course is kind of that way. It's basically saying, no, don't deny that there's pixels on a page, you know, or, you know, blots of ink on a poster. There's not any point to doing that. We need to use that as the mechanism by which we, we see the greater truth that is beyond that. And when we kind of use our own the magic eye, so to speak, that the ego presents, and look beyond it to the miracle eye, to extend that metaphor a little bit, we the pattern is very clear and apparent once we shift our depth perception and look beyond the surface to the underlying motivation, to look at the why behind it, and to see that the grievances are based on the ego's why, which is the superficial why of, oh, because I've always done it this way, and I don't want to really look at the deeper cause for maintaining the upset, because then that would undo the whole thought system and the whole identity complex that is massively dysfunctional, and as Ken Wapnick says, the maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem. You know? Yeah. Another person who I got to meet a few years ago, David Icke, talks about how, we make and he was referring in particularly with the governmental and covert and not so covert operations, making up a problem and then proposing a solution that fits the it doesn't really solve the problem, but it appears to solve the problem. And so that problem solution complex is really just a reiteration of the ego's general strategy of making up a dream that's dysfunctional and then proposing a solution that always involves making something outside oneself and outside one's mind the focus of attention, because the real strategy, looked at honestly, is to keep us mindless. If we want to have a miracle, we need to go back to the mind, and we need to return to the awareness that we never left. Truly, that says nothing happened, not a single mm-hmm. note in heaven song was missed, and we can afford to gently laugh at our investment in the world of dreams.
Yes, and it's I like that analogy that you were giving just earlier, and it just kind of comes right back to taking the hand of the inner teacher.
Yeah.
And if we take the hand of the inner teacher, then we can truly change our focus.
Yes.
Just change our focus. And it was there all the time. The other picture, the three-dimensional picture, hiding behind what we thought we were seeing. And in that analogy, you could see all those dots and all the abstractness. Those are the grievances. Mm-hmm. Those are all the grievances.
Yeah.
But if we're willing to ask for help, if we're willing to take the hand of the inner kindness teacher, and then all of a sudden our focus changes, and I always call it soft eyes, because that's kind of what it is. It's like, if you stop staring at the picture and just allow your vision to go a little bit soft, is when you actually, it's when I can see beyond it. That's when I can see those three-dimensional pictures. And I love those, by the way. And
they're fun.
They are fun, but what a great analogy, because that's exactly it. The pictures were always there the whole time.
Uh-huh.
It's just, what perspective are you using to look at it?
Right.
So what are you going to see? It's all there, and you get the choice of what you're going to see by what you choose to see, and or in this case, who you choose to be your teacher.
Yeah. And we have those aha moments whenever we choose to forgive, because the chaos and the randomness of the jumble of seemingly unrelated things that the ego presents for us, that to keep us always firefighting and always, in a fearful state. Suddenly, if we just, like you say, we just relax a little bit and have the soft eyes, the focus then becomes shifted to, from the character on the screen to back to the what, back to the, from the who back to the what, which is the pure awareness that is looking at the the jumble with objectivity, and then we see the pattern. We see the why behind it. All the whys that the ego piles on top of each other that are all dysfunctional, maladaptive whys suddenly become clear, and we say, "Oh, this isn't working. I don't need this." And there's the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
We've replaced a grievance with a miracle.
Yeah, and I think, once again, kind of arguing for our right to have the grievances, or arguing for the right of the jumbled picture is the better one. You know, I have a right to see the jumbled picture. Okay, so look at the jumbled picture. If you like the jumbled picture better than the other picture, you can choose that. You know, that's your choice.
Yeah, yeah. That reminds me of Richard Bach's Illusions. One of the quotes in his Little Messiah's Handbook is, argue for your limitations. And sure enough,
and they're yours. I remember that. You know, and what a great line, isn't that?
It is, yeah. Well, yeah, because, we fight tooth and nail for our victimhood. And if we can just begin to look at that and begin to look at the things that annoy us or that we're afraid of or that we're concerned about, you know, because you mentioned, you know, the fear in the media that is really a reflection of our choice to, participate in a thought system or not at any given moment. But that's our savior. That can be our, just as much as a person can be our savior and is moment to moment. So are the pixels on the screen of our TVs and our computers and our smartphones and tablets and whatever else we, you know, happen to be watching, no different, except in form, but the content really is the same. And it's all just a projection. And I think that's where the technology actually offers some great insights, is that it's all a big movie. It's all a big holographic reenactment of a tiny mad idea that was over long ago that we're just learning to not quite invest so much of our identity in.
Yeah. Well, and I don't remember if we talked about this again, but what I'm reminded of is those people that were kind of holed up in that on the federal land in the sanctuary or something. Mm-hmm. And now I know that they have released it. But anyway, I remember hearing a story that they were all over Facebook and sending out all these messages about send supplies, you know, send supplies. But what was being shown is that, you know, for the most part, the sheriff in town or whoever was taking care of it, I don't even think it was the sheriff, but, you know, the wildlife commissioner, whoever it was, they hadn't blocked the roads. They weren't doing anything. And so the point was, all they had to do is get in their cars or trucks and drive to town and get their supplies and come back, because the authorities were taking a very, very loose approach. You know, they weren't trying to create a confrontation. And so it was sort of like, what are all these pleas on Facebook for supplies when all they have to do is go in town and get them? You know, but once again, I bring it right back to what we're talking about today, because that's what we do. You know, we throw up all this stuff instead of just doing the easy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I realize we need to close the show today, Bruce. And I had a great time. Let's put it that way.
Me too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
for joining me today. And do you have any announcements? I know that you have that meeting. It's not a meeting, the workshop that's going on in June. Do you want to announce that again?
Sure. That's the Weekend of Freedom Retreat. And that's June 16th through the 19th. That is in Estes Park, Colorado. I have on acimblog.com, I've got some links to that, as well as another retreat that's just a month before in the same area for people in the Colorado area. And that is with Lynn Corona and Tim Wise are doing that one, and also highly recommended. That's going to be happening closer to Colorado Springs. You can find links to both of those. That's the School for A Course in Miracles Resurrection Retreat in the Colorado Springs area. Both of those are highly recommended. I will happen to be personally going to be at the one in Estes Park in June. I'm very much looking forward to that. Oh, also, I just posted an article that Cindy Laura Renard wrote. Just a really wonderful, just for any level of course student, just kind of an overview of the course's metaphysics. And so that's on the featured commentary section on acimblog.com. For people might want to read that. What else? Oh, all kinds of fun stuff happening, but that's plenty for now. So thanks again, CA. And
thank you.
To our next conversation.
Okay. And everybody, what he's referring to is you can go to that website, www.acimblog.com, and you can find those links that Bruce was talking about. So, right. Bruce, thank you so much for being here. Thanks to all the listeners and everybody who participated in the chat room. Thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. And remember, you can always find me on 12listen.com. You can also find me on 12 Academy teaching classes. And you can find me on 12 Radio every Tuesday with my other show. So until next week, Relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about grievances.